Hello everyone, and welcome to minute 24 of season 10 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Richard Kirkham, the Shepherd of the Lambcast. Welcome back to the show once again, Richard.
Thank you, Rob. I'm having a good time this week, enjoying talking about this terrific movie.
Me too. All right. So minute 24 begins with the pimp responding and ends with Garber continuing his explanation. So we ended things yesterday with a little bit of violence. You know, we get to see that these hijackers mean business, especially Mr. Gray, who, you know, when the pimp speaks out of line, he jams him in the face with the butt of his gun, and then we had the old man try to commiserate him, and you know, basically turning to him and saying it's terrible. And this minute begins with the pimp responding to him and says, "Who asked you to look?" Now, I mean, we alluded to this yesterday the way that this response is or whatever, but what's your take on what is he basically saying here?
Well, he's basically rejecting any of the sympathy that's being offered to him. And there are probably a variety of reasons for that. You know, there are ethnic tensions that go on. There's a difference in age. He doesn't want to acknowledge that he's been, you know, smacked in the face by somebody that he can't react to. And so maybe he's also a little bit embarrassed about that, and having somebody sympathize with him is, you know, potentially something that a person in that situation would see as being diminishing them in some way. So it's easier for him to just reject any offer of sympathy than to acknowledge it and seem like he's sharing the same perspective as somebody that's so different from him.
All right. Okay. I completely agree. I was, to me, it was, you know, he's responding this way out of embarrassment.
Yeah.
And again, it works. It works with the way that they do this between. And then right after they have this little conversation, we get another shot of Gray just staring at them. And the old man looks at him and then looks over towards where Blue is at the same time also. And now there's something very strange. I mean, Mr. Green basically had disappeared. You know, we didn't see him get off the train. He was standing there behind Blue and Doyle 2 days ago. And then they moved forward, and that was it. And now we see Mr. Green basically, you know, come from afar, walking towards the train. And we talked earlier in the week about the geography. So they are at the back of the train, which means that Mr. Green is in between the train and the nine cars. He's in between the front car and the nine back cars that Doyle is currently helping all the passengers down from. You know, or we can assume that's what he's doing at this point. And Blue calls out to him and he goes, "All right, Mr. Green." And he goes, "Yeah, the power's off from 14th Street to 33rd. All four tracks, local and express, the north and the southbound." And Blue then asks a question which is purely for us. And he goes, "Why am I still seeing these lights in the tunnel?" He goes, "Oh, those are the emergency ones. They run on AC. Like the signals." And you know, he gets back up onto the train, and as he's doing this, you know, he just sneezes once again, and then Blue says, "Stop that, will you?" Now, it's a very interesting and funny response, you know, for him to say it that way, because you know, can someone stop a sneeze?
You can stifle a sneeze. I don't think you can really stop it. And Rob, help me clarify again. You just said that they were at the back of the train. Didn't they move all the passengers to the back of the cart?
Yes, they did. And then Blue was standing there at the back when he walked through with Doyle. He walked through
Yeah.
from the front to the back
But
with Doyle,
so
and then
it, so
Doyle
if
got
all of
down.
the passengers are currently at the back of the car, how can this be the back of the car? Because this is at the opposite end.
It's not the opposite end. He's still also at the back of the car. Oh wait, you know what? I think you're right. Now, okay, now
Because
as
there's
I
a
said,
shot,
there's a shot of gray at the back of the car. I think you're right. It looks. Because okay, we see that the drunk woman.
Yeah, she would be the furthest front.
Okay, so I need to amend what I said before. They are actually in the front of the car. They're not in the back of the car. So
Yeah, I
okay,
think green has
okay, that
gone
makes
in
sense.
front of the
Green,
car,
that's
not
right.
behind the car.
That's right. Green disappeared when they were standing in the front. I misled you.
No, it's okay.
Right.
Like I said, it's a little disconcerting because the outside is dark and you don't have any reference point on that. And we just have the where the you barely have any reference point in the train car. The door to the cabin where the operator, the con not the not the
The
conductor,
engineer,
but the
engineer.
engineer operates, that's our clearest indicator that that's the front of the car.
Correct. But again, when we see the shot, looking back, and we see gray at the back door, and we see
Yeah.
brown on the side, and the passengers that we see, like the old man and the pimp, are closer to where gray is, and the hooker and the secretary are closer to us, as is
Yeah.
the drunk woman.
Right.
So yeah.
Right.
Okay, you're right. Thank you for correcting me on that. They are at the blue and green are standing at the front of the train,
Right.
which means that, and it's also pretty interesting that he was able to find the switches that are going to turn off all of the lights from 14th to 33rd Street. I mean, that's 20 blocks. That's pretty impressive.
Well, I'm assuming that in the planning of this, that they thought about where they were going to stop and why they needed to stop at each of those spots.
Oh, for
And
sure.
Green has the insider knowledge where the junction box would be located, I suppose.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the planning here is unbelievable with the way that they did this. Again, as you said, they knew exactly where they were going to stop. They knew where they were going to uncouple the train. They knew where they were going to move this car away from the back cars. I mean, everything is completely planned out well. Also, you know, they leave the nine cars in the back somewhat closer to the next the previous stop. So, you know, they don't have to worry about people getting lost along the way. And accidentally causing problems that nobody really wants to get into at this point. So yeah, I like the way that they do that. Then Green responds to him and says, sorry. Then he says to him, leave the door open. You have any idea why he wants him to leave the door open? It's a strange comment because it makes it sound as if he doesn't trust him.
Well, I think that because he is the one who's interacting with the train master and ultimately Garber as it comes up, that he's going to want to have access to whatever communication is coming in, and it's going to be over the microphone or the speaker that's in that cabin.
So you're saying he wants the door open so that he can hear everything that's being said
Right.
from the other side.
Right.
Okay. All right, that's fair. And he Blue hands
Nobody's wearing
Green.
headphones, so it's got to come over a speaker in there.
Right. That's true. And Blue hands Green a huge case, which
Yeah.
makes you wonder how they got this on the train, because we didn't see anyone carrying a case like this.
They were all carrying cases at
And
one
they
point.
all, every one of their cases was carrying guns. They all have submachine guns.
I don't remember that. Well, they all have submachine guns, but I don't know that they all came out of different cases.
Well,
I don't remember. That
they came in a plural.
occurred earlier. That's not my minute.
That's true. That's true. They came out with flower boxes, which had the guns inside. So, yes, it was not your minute, so you don't have to worry about that one. You don't have to explain that one out.
Well, all of their cases were different shapes.
Yes. The maybe they were carrying both a flower cartons and like a briefcase. So
Yeah, well,
maybe
I assume that the case that Mr. Green is carrying in there is the equipment that they're going to use to rig the dead man's switch.
yes, I believe so too. That was going to be
And
my
that's, of
next
course,
question.
down the road, not my minute again.
Yes.
Sorry.
Down the track, not necessarily down the road. Then we hear over the loudspeaker, we hear Corell again going, "Command Center calling Pelham 123. Did you cut off the power down there without calling Power Central to explain?" And then he says, "Huh?" Which is a very funny "huh" that we get there. He goes, "Now you listen to me, Pelham 123. Cut this out and answer me. You're screwing up the whole New York City subway system." So what we're understanding from the way that he's talking here is that no one has any iota of an idea that they're dealing here with a hijacking. They just think
Not yet.
it's some driver who's causing problems.
Right.
Like nowadays they would know right away, okay, Denny Doyle's the engineer of this particular train, and have even more information at the touch of their fingertips for this whole thing. For them to say, "Oh, I know Denny Doyle. This is the guy who always plays practical jokes," or "That's unlike him," that type of thing. So back then, just by making the comments this way, it still works very, very well. And this is a great transition because as we're in the control, the command center, while we see Carell talking, so Garber, who last week started his little tour of the whole area, actually shows up. Again, it helps with the geography for us to understand, how Garber is going to be getting involved in this whole thing. He's walking with these four Japanese businessmen, and he goes, "Gentlemen, this is the command center. This is the TA command center. Come on in. A lot of laughs in here. Terrific place. See, each train is identified by the name of its terminus and the time of its departure. Thus, an express train leaving Woodland at 6:30 p.m. would be Woodland 630, while on its return trip, its destination might be," and then he gets cut off. So I think it's great that 24 minutes into this movie, almost 25 minutes into this movie, they're finally explaining to us what is Pelham 123. Up until
Yeah.
then, people know that they're calling that's the call sign that people are aware of. But the genius of using the call sign based on, as he says, the terminus and the time of departure is just great. Because you're going to have a Pelham 123 and you're going to have a Pelham 145 and things like that. I'm not sure if you've heard this, but there's there's trivia about this movie. There's never a train that leaves the Pelham station in New York at 1:23 either AM or PM ever since this movie came out. It's like
They
a superstition. Let's just stay as
just
far
don't want
away
to
from
tempt
that
fate.
stuff. No, not at all. I don't blame them. It definitely makes sense that for them to do it that way. So he mentions Woodlawn. Do you know anything about a place called Woodland or Woodlawn?
I think it got mentioned in one of the Die Hard movies.
Yes, it did. It was, well, not the same place. There's a Woodland in Maryland that they talk about there in
That's
Die Hard.
yeah.
Yes,
Otherwise,
I was
I'm not
waiting to see
familiar.
if you knew that.
No, I
Okay.
don't know the geography of New York City well enough to be able to say where it is in like relationship to anything else.
Okay, so it's in the Bronx. Its official name is Woodlawn Heights, but it's just known as Woodland. And it's a very prominent area of the Bronx. It has a population of just about 8,000 people that are living there based on the latest census in 2020. In the New York area, it is one of the places that has the highest rate of preterm births or births to teenage mothers in the entire New York City area.
Well, my understanding is the Bronx is the poverty area of the city, so that would make sense that that's an enclave inside of the Bronx.
What other information do we have about that? And there is also the Woodland Cemetery, which is located there, which is one of the largest cemeteries in New York, and it is a historical landmark. It was opened during the Civil War in 1863, and there are some very famous people that are actually buried there. First of all, and nowadays, if you're looking for a to pay for a plot there, it's approximately $5,000 for a plot. And if you want your family mausoleum, that'll cost you $1.5 million. So yeah, it's a pretty expensive place to get buried, I guess. Have you ever seen the movie Once Upon a Time in America?
Yes.
Okay, so there's a famous scene in that movie in a cemetery. And it's actually it was filmed there. They
Oh, okay.
renamed it the Riverdale Cemetery at the time. Okay, some of the famous people that are buried here. You have the former Chief Justice of the U.S. Charles Evans Hughes. There's an actress named Cicely Tyson.
Oh, yeah.
Olympic swimmer Gertrude. Ederle, I think that's how you pronounce it. She was the first woman to swim across the English Channel. She was known as Queen of the Waves. George M. Cohen is buried there,
That would make sense.
from Yankee Doodle Dandy fame. Damon Runyon is buried there. Herman Melville is buried there. Dorothy Parker, Irving Berlin,
A lot of
Miles Davis.
authors, huh?
Yeah, Irving Berlin, Miles Davis, Duke Ellington. Otto Preminger is buried there. Husband and wife magicians Alexander and Adelaide Herman are
Yeah, well,
there.
yes, the Hermans.
Okay, you're familiar with them. I know
Yes.
you know all about the magic stuff.
Yeah, I've heard of them before, yes, and I've seen posters of their act. I had a friend of my father's did a tribute act to Herman, where he basically played Herman on stage, you know, so he did magic from that era as part of a stage presentation, and he had the fancy mustache and the traditional garb of Herman. Herman was late 19th, early 20th century.
Yes, a French magician.
Yeah.
He was known as the queen of, his wife was known as the queen of magic. Bat Masterson, he's a gunfighter and U.S. Marshal, was also buried there. The shipping magnate Archibald Gracie is buried there.
Is he? I assume he's the one that Gracie Mansion's named after.
I believe so. Yes. Yes, it is. It is. Who else? Macy, from the department store, Roland Hussey
Macy's.
Macy. He's buried there. As is the other famous
Gimbal.
department store, Woolworth.
Oh, Woolworth. Okay.
Woolworth is there also. There is apparently an area known as Brewers Row there because they have a whole bunch of New York brewers. There are more than a dozen of them that are buried around there. So, yeah. I just thought that's a little interesting that he just throws out Woodland when he talks about that. And, you know, he basically gets cut off mid-speech to end this minute. So we will have to wait until tomorrow to find out where the... you know where the train will be coming back the other direction on the return trip. Did you have anything else you wanted to add to this, Richard?
I do not.
All right. Excellent. So every Thursday we have a segment that is that's called 70s Movie Potpourri Trivia, where my guest will. We'll have to guess. I'm going to give you five different trivia questions from movies from the 70s. And you'll have to answer them.
I'll do my best.
So every Thursday, we have a segment called 70s Movie Potpourri, where I will ask my guest five different movie trivia questions from movies from the 1970s. So I'm doing this once again at random. So I'm going to spin the wheel, and we're going to see what questions Richard is going to get. All right. So your first question is, okay, what 1974 movie is about a reporter who discovers evidence of a political assassination conspiracy?
The Parallax View.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Let us spin the wheel again. Check out the next question that we're going to be asking. Who plays Janet in the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Susan Sarandon.
Very good.
Damn it.
All right. And now we will spin the wheel once again and see what the next question is. All right. Spin the wheel again. We'll see what question Richard gets. For your third trivia question. Okay. On the very first day of filming of this famous movie, the country experienced its first major rainstorm in 50 years.
First major.
But I'll tell you the name of the country that will give it away in a second. So.
Oh.
But it was filming in the desert. How's that?
Okay. Well, how about The Wind and the Lion?
No.
All right.
Okay, so now
in Morocco.
No, it's not Morocco. It's a different place. On the first day of filming in the deserts of Tunisia, the country experienced
its Oh, it's Star Wars rainstorm. Then.
Exactly. You see, I knew that if I tell you Tunisia, that's going to...
yeah, that would tip it. Away,
but why not? All right, we will spin the wheel once again, and let's see what we get. Okay. In the 1974 movie, The Taking of Pelham 123,
okay.
Who is the wife of the composer of the movie?
Oh, that's Talia Shire.
That is correct.
Who got an Academy Award nomination that year for her part in Godfather Part II.
That is correct. And, sadly, David Shire never got an Oscar nomination for this movie, for his score.
The score in this movie is terrific.
Yes. All right. And now I will ask you your final question. Apparently, these are all too easy for you. We will see where this lands and what you get. All right. You're going to know this one, too. What is the name of the main character in Taxi Driver?
Travis Bickle.
Correct. All right. Great. Excellent. Thank you very much for playing. Sorry that you didn't get any Jaws questions.
That's all right. You know, the 70s are my jam, so I liked all those films.
Right. So once again, we will play the daily game of Name That Remake. So let's see. Let's spin the wheel once again and see what remake Richard will get, and let's see if he can continue his role of being able to guess just by the years. So let's
Pressure's
spin the
on.
wheel. Pressure's on. Pressure's on. Exactly. Okay, this is a movie. The original movie came out in 1976, and the remake was in 2003. And it's about a mother and daughter who have a very crazy day.
Oh, this is Carrie.
No, it is not.
The movie came out in 76 and the
The
remake
movie
was
came
in
out in 70.
2003.
Yes,
And what did you say? What was the description that you gave?
a mother
I may
and
have
a
jumped in
daughter.
early.
A mother and a daughter have a very, very hectic day.
Oh, a hectic day.
Yes.
I jumped in too early there. I should have listened to that. A hectic day. Huh. 76. Mother and daughter. Oh, is this is Freaky Friday.
Yes, it is. Very good.
Which I should have thought about immediately because, well, when your show here airs, it'll already be a month since the film came out. But at the time we're recording, the sequel to that film is opening this week. Freakier Friday.
Probably not featuring Jodie Foster.
No.
Excellent. So, Richard, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Richard Kirkham?
Sure thing. You can find me at the Lambcast, which is our weekly podcast from the Large Association of Movie Blogs. You can search that out any of your podcatchers just by searching Lambcast. And we also have a YouTube channel that has episodes of the Lambcast that are illustrated. And then on my personal blog site, you can find me at Kirkham a Movie a Day on the WordPress. It's kirkhamamovieaday.com. And Kirkham a Movie a Day is also on the Kirkham class.blogspot.com site, which contains links to all of my other projects.
All right, excellent. Thank you very much for that. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Richard, feel like coming back again tomorrow to talk once again about this movie?
One more day of taking a Pelham 123. I think I can do that.
Excellent. So, until tomorrow, achoo!
Gesundheit.